session two, workshop two, and the topic is Sunday School, the Teaching Arm of the Church by Pastor David Lanning of Shawnee Baptist Church out of Louisville.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you. All right, so I gave you handouts so I could keep you awake this morning. That's what that's for. All right, so if we don't get to it all, or you just fill in the blanks later. And I will just at the outset say that there's no way we'll be able to accomplish all of this. So let me give you four books I recommend for you to read. The Bible, number one. Number two, no, I'm just teasing. The four books. I mean, I'm not kidding. You should read the Bible as well. But, so four books I'd recommend for you to read that would help you if you're really wanting to kind of further your understanding of the Sunday School. First is Sunday School Changes Everything by Henrietta Mears. And a great book, very practical as far as how to work through a setup structure and figuring out what your structure is. Some of that we'll talk about later. The next one is Transformational Groups by Eric Geiger. And one that'll really set up for you the need to get people into smaller settings to learn. The third one is called Growing Up by Robbie Galtry, and very helpful on how to start at the base and take your groups through a learning process. What do you want them to talk about when they get together? And this is one of the big problems, and we'll talk about that in a little while, but this is one of the big problems. You say, well, we want you to teach a Sunday school class because you have a need for a specific life stage or age, and the person you're asking is looking at you like, what am I supposed to say? You know? And you know, just go in there, it'll be okay, you know, do a magic trick and use some puppets and we'll make it happen, you know. So growing up, like, what do we want them to actually know? And then the last one, which is where we got the title for the session, but 154 Steps to Revitalize Your Sunday School by Elmer Towns. And I don't have 154 steps, okay? But it's a great read, and they're very short, they're easy to understand, and you won't implement them all, but there would be a couple that you would do. And that's where we got the title from. Sunday School, the Teaching Arm of the Church. Mr. Towns said this. He said, the Sunday School in action is the brick, or is the mortar that holds the bricks together and becomes the foundation for the house. So whether your structure is Sunday school, that happens to be ours, whether your structure is Sunday school, or whether it's small group, or whether it's life class, it doesn't matter. However you break it down, whatever the format is, we've tried a little bit of everything, okay? We've tried small groups. In fact, we have one Sunday school class that does that now. My Sunday school class, I teach a young couples class. We have small groups inside of the Sunday school structure. We do life classes. We do our life classes quarterly on Wednesday nights. But then every Sunday morning, we have just our kind of basic Sunday school structure. And I believe the reason the Sunday school structure has lasted as good and as long as it has, because there's already a structure there. There's a place for kids to go. There's a nursery care for the infants. There's a place for little kids. And when you have the extra structures, you got to find ways for people to watch kids. So, you know, if you find out what we do, that fits best. Okay, so the principles I'm going to give you today, you can implement them in whatever structure you're trying to work with and work through. Okay, so for us, that's the Sunday school. So the need is, and it's kind of the premise of the outline, the need is, if the only teaching that your congregation is getting through the course of the week is 45-minute sermon, they're probably not learning very much. If all they get is what we're standing up in front of our congregation and trying to unload on a wide range of life experience and life stage and life problems, they're probably not learning a lot. That's not to say that they can't learn a lot. It's just there's so much more to learn than what we could deliver through a sermon. Also, if we were honest, right, there comes a time when people in your church, however much they love you and care about you, get tired of listening to you talk. Like, it just, there just happens, this thing just kind of, it just processes. Why you can bring in a guest preacher and he preaches the same thing that you've been going over for like 3 months, and they're like, wow, that's the best thing I've ever heard, you know, and you're going, I just preached on that last week, you know. So there comes a time when people just kind of get tired of listening to you talk, and it doesn't have the same effect. And so you need other voices to reiterate what you're doing. And the Sunday school or the small group or whatever structure that is can become that. What I believe is when the Sunday school structure, the small group structure is done the best way, It provides the most substantive place for life change. And it also provides the most sustained life change. Right? So we can talk about how we help somebody learn and how we help them grow, but getting them in, giving them the gospel, winning them to Christ. But then the other element to this is watching them grow over the long term, right? Wanting that fruit that would remain, right? That's what we all want. We want that fruit that would remain. The commission is not just to win them. The commission is to win them, to baptize them, and then to teach them that they may be able to teach others, right? That's the point, right? So this is what we want. And the Sunday school structure, in my opinion, the Sunday school structure gives us the best format to be able to accomplish that. And the reason it does is because the Sunday school provides, and this is our first point, it provides a culture for relationships. So I tend to think that people are probably a lot like I am or come from similar backgrounds that I come from and probably the same as you, and that is I enjoy meeting new people, I enjoy fellowshipping with new people, I enjoy getting to hear their story. But the people who I'm the closest to, right, the people who know me the best, the people who I will feel more confident opening up to or telling about my problems or telling what I'm wrestling with, that group of people is a very small group. Is it the same for you? I don't find a lot of comfort in standing up in front of 60 people and like raising my hand and saying, here's what I'm battling with, here's what I'm struggling, here's what I'm wrestling, here's what I struggled last week, here's what I need help on. I don't do that in a larger group, and probably you don't either. Okay, there's probably a handful of people who you are actually confident in and believe enough in and are willing to be vulnerable in front of. Right? That group of people is a handful of people. And the thing is the people who come to your church are probably the same way, right? They probably feel that same sense of, you know, there's a certain culture where the relationship is just, it's pretended to be there. We all have done that, and we've done it already this week. Hey, brother, you know, sister, you don't really know who you are, but good to see you, you know. How are you doing? And we don't really want an answer for that, right? How are you doing? Well, you know, life's really terrible. I'm thinking about quitting ministry. And then you're walking away from that guy like, okay, we'll see you later, you know. We'll provide that opportunity. And if we're not careful, we do the same thing at church, right? So Sunday school is a culture. Sunday school can provide a culture for which a relationship can really flourish, right? So the ABCs there of an effective relationship, they need three things. It needs accountability, it needs belonging, and it needs care. It needs accountability, it needs belonging, and it needs care. People care about and people care for the people that they know well. People care about and people care for the people that they know well. So the Sunday school, the small group structure can become, right, a place where people can pray for each other, where they can care one for another. If they're not in church or if they're absent on a day, they're actually missed and it's noticed. Right? These are the things that people want. They want to feel that there is an accountability. They want to feel that there is a sense of belonging. But they also want to feel a sense that someone in that group actually cares about them, actually knows their name, cares about their likes, attends their kids' games, is interested in their children's names. And honestly, you as the pastor or you as the leader, you can't do that on a full scale. It's impossible. You can't remember that many names. And so you need a structure that it provides an opportunity or an outlet for someone to be able to build a real relationship with. Number two there. So if this is the case, then we need to choose our strategy. Choose a strategy. You want to choose the... Here's how you choose the strategy that's going to work best for you, right? It's three questions. Where do you want them to meet? right? So that's the classes, and that's going to differ based on like what your church has available to you. If my position, we're building heavy, right? We have lots of buildings, lots of rooms, lots of space, lots of hallways, lots of tunnels. It was an old Catholic monastery, right? So there's tunnels that wind everywhere, lots of space, and so it's easier for us when we say, yeah, look, we want to start a class, we want to do A, B, C, D, E, F, G. You know, we want grades 1 through 6 and boys and girls, and it's a little bit simpler for us to be able to do that because we have more building space. For you, it may be different, right? You may have one major room. So you got to say, if we're going to start a structure, if we're going to do a structure, if we're going to have a structure, you got to have a where, right? So where do you want them to meet? You got to have a how, right? So what do you want them to do? How will they assemble? What will be the model? What will be the thing that brings them together? Will there be interaction? Will there be a video presentation? Will there be PowerPoints in each class? What will the class format actually? What will the class format actually look like? And sometimes the class format is based on gifting, right? It depends on who you have in there. Depends on who's leading it. Depends on the kind of the quality of the teacher that you have, right? So you have the where. Where do you want them to meet? What do you want them to do? That's the class format. And then you have the third one there. What do you want them to learn? And that's the what. And honestly, if there were a heartbeat behind the Sunday school format, this is where we need to really heavily invest. What are our kids learning? What are the members of our church learning? I go, what's, if they start in first grade coming to church and they go all the way through Sunday school, when they're done, when they're teenagers and hitting college and career age, what have they learned? Is it then the same lesson over and over? Is there a process? Has there been a growing up? Has there been a learning? Right. So the what there is the curriculum. The curriculum. What do we want people to learn? What do we want people to know? And this is what we know. Experience has taught us this, right? That people, at best, people repeat what they hear. People repeat what they hear. And so when we stand and when we teach and when we instruct, what are we telling them? What are we giving them? What are we rooting them in, right? And part of it is it's got to be a relationship and accountability, right? That's kind of that's what gets them in the door. But when they're there, once they've come through the door, what are they learning? What are they teaching? We sat down a few years back and we said, if a kid started attending our school, our Sunday school in first grade, by the time they got out of high school, what are all the things that they could learn? Because this is the selling point for Sunday school, right? So we said, here's what we want them to learn. We want to take them through obviously the Bible, but we want to go from the Kings, the Judges. We want the Psalms. We want the prophets, with the Gospels and the parables and the miracles. And then we want the church, and we just try to map out a strategy that said, look, this is what we want them to learn, and we're going to repeat this over and over in different ways for different life stages throughout, right? So, and look, you don't have to do all this work yourself. There's some great tools available. In fact, that's what I have there for you, some publishers that we've used, okay? So this will help you look up material curriculum if you want. Obviously, if you're using curriculum, you want it to be biblically sound. You want it to be applicable to the life stage. But here are the publishers that we've used. We've used Regular Baptist Press. We've used Scripture Press. We've used Answers for Bible Curriculum. We've used Life Way. We've used the Gospel Coalition. And we have used Striving Together. And we've taken all those kind of different groups and we've individualized that these are the things that we want our kids to know. These are the things that we want our teachers to teach. These are the tools that we're going to put in their hands. Right, so that kind of leads us to the next one. You need to commission qualified teachers. Just because someone is volunteering doesn't mean we should let them volunteer. Again, we have a bad habit with this, right? We find somebody who's willing and we immediately plug them in. Right? And that may not be the best solution, right? You may do more damage than good with that kind of model. So we need to commission, but we need to commission qualified teachers. So a teacher, your first one there, a teacher should be selected with caution. A teacher should be selected with caution. And this is why you need to set qualifications for your teachers. Right? This is why you need to say, before we pick anybody to teach, here's what we want to, here's what we expect for them. Here's what we're looking for in them. Here's what we want them to be. Here's the kind of lives we want them to model, or here's the things we want them to know. Here are the things we want them to do. Right? So we don't want to enter into this thing. One of the most difficult things to do is once you have somebody in place, getting them out of that place when you realize that they're a bad fit. Right? And a lot of times you go and you look, you're not really cut out for the fifth and sixth grade boys class, you know, and they're in there yelling and screaming and jumping and they're doing, you know, you're not really cut out. And then you have to remove that person from that position. That can be one of the most difficult things. Or they're out of the door, right? Well, what, you don't like me anymore? You know, I'm going to go find a church that does like me. So you want to be very careful, and you want to proceed with caution. Better to combine classes and use a qualified teacher than break up the classes or the group structure and have a problem on your hands that you've got to deal with later. So use caution, set qualifications, and use those qualifications best you can. Next there, teachers need to have character. A teacher needs to have character. They need to have a solid reputation among the members. They need to have a solid reputation among your deacons. They need to be people of integrity. Before we nominate someone to teach a class, we always bring them up in our deacons meeting and we kick around the idea, say, oh, what about this guy? Anybody have any questions? Anybody have any problems? Anybody have any issues? Anybody have anything? And here's why. Because they know more than I know. Right? A lot of times, you're the last one to know, right? Oh yeah, do you know about that guy? Yeah, I know about that guy. So you want to bring that up, and you want to be very careful about entering into that and bringing that person into a place of leadership or putting that person in a place of things. So you need to find people with character. Number three there, a teacher must embrace the culture that you're trying to set. A teacher must embrace the culture that you're trying to set. They need to be pulling in the same direction that you're pulling. They need to be headed in the same direction that you're headed. This is incredibly important for the formative years, right? This is incredibly important for 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th grade. Right? You cannot have a teacher in one of those environments, you cannot have a teacher teaching one of those classes where they're so formative, where they're so impressionable, right? That they're drifting this side and they're pulling them this way and they're teaching them and they're captivating, they're stealing their hearts, they're winning them over, they're in that. I can remember my 7th and 8th grade Sunday school teacher like that fast. I mean, I can almost tell you, I can't tell you exactly his lessons, but I can tell you like the gist of his lessons because I was very impressionable at that age, and he was so much fun. Like in my mind as a 7th, like he's a nerd now, but like in my mind as a 7th and 8th grade kid, that guy was unbelievably awesome, right? And when I look back and I go, well, what made him so fun? I don't actually really know what made him fun. He brought donuts to class. He stayed after and played basketball with us. I remember he brought like one of like the world's hottest pepper to class one day. Then he paid kids like $10 to eat it, you know? I mean, like, these are the things I remember, right? But in my mind, right, at that age, in my mind, that was like, dude, he was the coolest man to ever walk on the earth, right? And it's a good thing for us that he was pulling the same direction that the church was going and that the authorities in the church were going, because we have enough stories where that's not the case, right? We have enough stories where that's not the case. So you need to have somebody who understands, especially in those very, very formative years. Better for you to teach it. Let me just say it. Better for you to teach it than for you to give to somebody that you can't entrust. Right? Okay, I'm just telling you that. Last one there, the teacher needs to be competent. And this is what I mean. This is what I mean by competent. The teacher's job is to do a couple things, right? Apart from accountability, belonging, care, right? Facilitate growth and monitor the people in the class. They are your ears for what's happening. They are your ears for the problems that they're seeing. They are your ears for the care that individual needs to be given. Right, so I'm sure you have folks like this. You have like the fringe, whether it's fringe coming in or whether it's fringe going out in your church, right? People who are like, you know, I just don't feel like their heart is quite with everything we're doing. You have people like that in your church. I have people like that in my church, right? And what you need is you need a good teacher and good leadership and good structure in place in in order to keep that person in, or to get them back in, or to bring them in. Right? And that Sunday school teacher is that person. So you need that. There's no way that you can administrate that yourself, but you need that competent leader in that group or for that person that helps keep that person accountable, that helps bring them in, or that says, hey, did you know so-and-so did this, or did you know they're in the hospital, or did you know, or maybe you should have them over to your house, or maybe you should take them out for a cup of coffee because they're asking questions. Right? This also helps you, right? When you say things behind the pulpit that after you say it, you're like, man, why did I say that? You know? Because then that gives that person someone to go to and say, you know, he said this, but I don't really know if I believe that. And that gives that person someone that they can go to. Or while you're preaching and you're watching their faces, you know, and they're scratching their head or they're getting angry, and you can find that person, Sunday school teacher, and say, hey, you know, do this. This is the oversight. Right? This is the oversight. And so this is why you need to commission, and I preface the word, qualified teachers. You have to work at getting qualified teachers. Last one. There. Constantly celebrate the wins. Constantly celebrate the wins. If I had to ask you this question, could you answer it? And here it is. What is the win for relationships in your church? What would you say? This is the win. Here's what I'm afraid of. I'm afraid most of us would just go, I just want people to come on Sunday. Right? So if we don't know what the win is, right, then we can't know how to strategize, we can't know how to plan, we can't know how to work, we can't know how to get there. Right? So we have to qualify the win. What's the win? I want him to learn this. I want him to experience this. I want him to be provided this. I want the church to gain this. Right? So here's the win. I want accountability. I want belonging. I want care. We need qualified teachers. We need to be teaching the right materials. We need good curriculum. I need to stand back at the end of the day and go, you know what? If you put your kid in our Sunday school structure from first grade to 12th grade, they're going to walk out the door with a great understanding of biblical truth, of God's plan for their life, of God's love, of God's purpose. And if they come, if they listen, they're going to get it. They're going to get it. Is that the win? Then you have to celebrate the wins. What is valued is what is celebrated. Whatever you're celebrating, that will become the value of the church. Whatever you're parading, that will become it. It doesn't matter if it's Sunday school, if it's life groups, if it's small groups, if it's life classes. I don't care what your structure necessarily is. But if you aren't celebrating it, then your church isn't going to value it. They aren't going to fall in love with you, with it. They'll love it because you love it. They'll love it because you're celebrating it. They'll love it because they hear you talking about it and they see you modeling a good example by it and in it. So constantly celebrate the wins. And then the last thing I put there, this is where I want to leave you. Just on the super practical, okay? So we can talk and we can get a lot of information, we can get a lot of things, but this just, what do you need to work on? Right, because all of us need to work on something, right? None of us are perfectly content with the structure that we have in place, right? So what area do you need to work on? Maybe it's the curriculum. Maybe you're here and you're going, you know, honestly, I have no idea what our teachers taught last week, and I have no idea what they're going to teach next week. You know, well, that doesn't help. Okay, that's not good. Right? So we're going to say, I got to work on this, or I got to work on that. What area? And just pick one of these areas and say, I'm going to invest myself in teacher training. I'm going to invest myself in teacher training. So we do ours once a quarter. Once a quarter, we have a Wednesday night. We take a part from the Wednesday evening service. If you're a Sunday school teacher, we have Sunday school teacher leader training where we stand and we teach. And here's how you do this. We've gone through the laws of the learner. We've done a little bit of everything throughout the years, and we've tried to say, here's how you become a better teacher. Here's how you become a better leader in these individual areas. So that is it. I think we have a little bit more time. Somebody have a question? We'd love to help and answer in any way we can. If not, we'll hit the bathrooms before everybody else gets there. Yes, sir.
How many adult classes do you have? And how do you divide?
We divide our adult classes by life stage. And then we have seven adult classes.
What do you do with singles that are older?
We have a singles class. We have a college and what we call college and career. It's actually called a crossroads class. And then beyond that, we have what we call adult singles class. So anybody who's like 30 and above, we ask. Now we don't tell anybody where they have to go, right? But those would be the places that we push them. We have single classes also for our elderly men and our elderly ladies. Inside of that, a new structure for us, something that we just started last year, and it's one of our great, it's really one of the best classes we have, one of the fastest growing classes we have right now, is we have, we call it the WOW class, the Women's of Word class. Sheila Snyder teaches it, and it's single ladies, single moms. And an area, we had a lot of classes for couples. We had a lot of opportunities for that, you know, so young couples and middle-aged couples and older couples. But then, you know, we had this a slew of single moms that were coming, and they didn't have any place to go. You know, they were just drifting into the morning service, and they didn't have any place else to go. So we started this single moms class, and it's taken off like wildfire, and really is just a great class. And then in conjunction with that, we started our like single adult class, you know, to try to help pair up some older folks. So those would be the ones that we do.
At what size would you break up a class, split up an age group?
That really depends on the teacher. It depends. Well, let me answer it this way. It depends on the teacher, and it depends on what you're after, right? So for me, if I'm looking at the young couples in my class, and I've got 60 young couples in my class, they're not going to connect with all 60 people. Right, so that's what led us to do the small groups inside of my Sunday school structure. Right, so if you came to my Sunday school class, you've got 8 tables that sit around the room, or 10 tables that sit around the room with 8 to 6 chairs at each table, and then we assign a table leader at that table, or for that table, for that group. They stay in that group for 6 months, then you rotate. As a matter of fact, we just went through a rotation. And then I send out the week before what we're going over that day in Sunday school, right? So we went through the Ten Commandments of Marriage, right? It was a book done by Adrian Rogers. We went through his stuff. I just photocopied his things. I sent his stuff out to my Sunday school teacher. Said, "Here's what I'm," or to the small group leaders. I said, "Here's what I'm teaching. You can bring your own material at the end." So we get done. I start teaching at 10 o'clock. I get done teaching at 10:30, and then we leave the last 15 to 20 minutes for the small group in order to say prayer request, or you know, for them to kind of drive home their points, or for them to build relationships, or for them to, you know, whatever they need to do inside of that afterwards. So it depends on the teacher first, but it also depends on what you're going after, right? So if you're going, look, I've got 30 fourth, fifth, and sixth graders, boys and girls, but I don't have anybody to teach them, well, they probably don't, that's probably good enough, right? But if you're going after adults or young couples or single moms, they probably need more, right? Because they have more to say too, right? So you're, depends on where you're coming from that perspective.
Well, in our case, you know, our church is growing, but we have classes from 30 to 60.
Sure.
So at what stage, with the size, would you split that up? Because that's obviously more than one life stage.
Yeah. Well, I would break it by life stage. And then, you know, Elmer Townsend's book would say multiplication, multiplication, multiplication. So if you can do it, if you can break it, then you should. But I think it really would depend on your own culture and if you have the people qualified to do that. I wouldn't break it if it wasn't qualified. We have classes that run 80 people on Sunday morning. We have an adult Sunday school class, or home builders class. They run 80 people on Sunday morning. And there's accountability, there's care, there's belonging. That's all being accomplished. And then it's kind of the older generation of my church, so they don't really want to sit at a table and share their problems with somebody, you know? So we tried to do the tables in there, and they just like, they hated it. You know, I mean, they did not like it at all. So we went back to the regular structure. So there's 80 people. They sit together in class, and they feel like that's their own. They've provided their own culture of care and belonging. So I'm not going to mess with that. You know, the last thing I want to do is create a problem. But this is what happens if you're after that. right? So you want to get it down to a smaller group, then I'd say implement it at a younger ages, and then that'll eventually grow through, right? So this is the way it goes, right? The way it goes is your young couples will eventually be your older couples. So commit to the plan, stick with the plan, see the vision, get people to buy in on the front part of it, and it'll happen in the long run. But we have a super qualified teacher who teaches that. Brother Skelly knows him, Ron Kendall, some of you may know him. Super qualified teacher. I mean, he goes over his list every week. You know, I mean, he can handle a group of 80. And I have other folks that can't, you know. So, any questions or ideas? Yes, sir.
Give us an example of what you would celebrate. You said we celebrate.
So, what we try to talk about every few weeks is I try to celebrate hospitality or fellowship that the Sunday school or the small group has done, right? So for my Sunday school class, if I know that this group over here went over to, you know, the hospital and they visited so-and-so who had a baby, and then they lined up taking her food, and they lined up watching her other kids, and they, right, so I'll stand up in Sunday school class and go, man, you know what, thank you for this table, thank you for doing that for us. They took care of the food, they took care of the hospital visit, they took care of this, you know, they even let me know, they bought the bag that I was able to take up, you know, thank you so much for that. Right? And those sorts of things take time. So I celebrate I don't celebrate attendance. I mean, I'm glad that they come. But I'm celebrating care, I'm celebrating accountability, and I'm celebrating acceptance, right? So just those steps that these people are building a relationship with that person, that's what I want everybody doing, right? So we need people coming to church, not just coming to be there, but coming to serve. Right? We would all say that. We all want people to serve. So anytime I find or hear about somebody who's done one of those things, that's what we talk about.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.